Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 37 of Pepperdine People. I am Luisa Blanco, and I am joined today by Roger Farmer from UCLA. It is a pleasure for the Pepperdine community to have Dr. Roger Farmer with us to touch on some of the issues that he discusses in his new book, How the Economy Works. And thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Luisa. It's a pleasure to be here.
First, I want to start our conversation by discussing, in your opinion, what factors do you think were the main causes of the financial crisis? We have heard from some people that the expansionary easing monetary policy that we have for quite some time in the 2000s was one of the main reasons of that led into the financial crisis. Then there is other people who really emphasize on the deregulation of the financial system that came with when the Glass-Steagall Act was repealed. And I really am very interested in hearing your thoughts on these.
I'd be glad to give them. So let me say that all the things you mentioned, I think, are factors, but none of them were critical factors.
Okay.
The crisis was a crisis very similar to crises that we've seen throughout the history of capitalism. In the 19th century, there were five financial crises like this. Gradually, we've been learning to control crises, prevent them from occurring, largely through, in my view, much more successful central bank policies. Now, what made this crisis different from the other recessions that we've seen since World War II, and there have been 10, including the current recession, is that the Fed essentially ran out of ammunition. So
yes.
In every other post-war recession, coming into the recession, the Fed has immediately lowered interest rates.
Yes.
That's provided a stimulus for people to get out and invest in the real economy. And what happened this time around is with the huge drop in confidence and value of financial assets, the Fed was no longer able to keep lowering interest rates because we reached zero.
Yes, and it had to come out with all these new tools, right? All these new approaches.
That's right. And the same thing happened in the early 1930s.
So it's a very similar financial crisis.
That, I think, is what makes this crisis closer to the Great Depression than anything we've seen in the post-war period. Yes.
Oh, very interesting. And I guess here's something that is important for us to discuss is that in the aftermath of the financial crisis and around the financial crisis, there was a debate about what economic model should prevail, the Keynesian and the classical. I would like to see if you can explain the nature of this debate to us.
I'd be happy to. So although this is a little simplistic, I think it's helpful. So I put economists into two groups, classical and Keynesian. The difference has to do with what they believe about the stability of the financial and the economic system. So I like to think of this in terms of physical analogies. And there was an economist in the 20th century called Ragnar Frisch, who had a model that I think is very helpful to describe the way classical economists think about the world. And that he called the rocking horse model.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And if you think of a child's rocking horse, and I like to think of a kid with a stick hitting the rocking horse, and it bounces up and down. But if you took the kid away, the rocking horse would come to rest at a unique equilibrium point.
The full employment.
Full employment.
Long-run equilibrium.
That's exactly right. And that's how classical economists think about the economic system. If you take away the shocks, the economy will come to rest at full employment.
Mm-hmm.
The 1930s and the experience of the UK in the 1920s, which was when the Depression first hit England, led a number of economists, particularly John Maynard Keynes, to be very skeptical of that model. And
yes.
He introduced an alternative view, which I like to call the windy boat model.
Well, he used to say, right, in the long run, we're all dead, so we got to do something now, right? But go ahead.
That's another one of my favorite quotes from Keynes.
But go ahead with the windy boat.
And that's a different analogy, and it's one that Keynesians hold. And for them, the economy is like a boat on the ocean with a broken rudder.
Oh, yeah.
And it's blown by the winds of economic winds of fortune. And if you took away the winds, just as if in the same way you took away the kid with the stick with the rocking horse, the boat could end up anywhere. And it could end up with very high unemployment, very low unemployment. And without a little bit of help from the government, Keynesians believe that that the economy can be stuck in a very bad equilibrium for a very long period of
time. So we need the government to steer the boat.
That's right.
And where do you put yourself? Do you have any Keynesian or classical in you?
A little bit of both. So a favorite quote of mine from Keynes is at the Bretton Woods conference at which the International Monetary Fund was put together. I think Keynes was famously quoted as saying, "I'm the only non-Keynesian in the room." And I think what I take away from that is that the central ideas in Keynes, I think, are probably right. But the way that they've been interpreted needs some changing. And we've had a lot of new data since the Great Depression. And some of that data, in my view, has led us to have to rethink.
Rethink his proposition.
Well, in particular, the best way to steer the boat.
Oh, okay. Very interesting. You're right. So we have a lot of work to do now, right, with all the data that we have been able to accumulate. Well, another important question here is, what do you think about the policies that were put in place with the financial crisis? So we have this huge fiscal stimulus that came in with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009, right? And then we have this very easy monetary policy, right? Very very low interest rates and all these increase of money in the economy, right? Money has grown significantly with the financial crisis. So do you consider these the right policies to deal with the financial crisis in the aftermath or that?
Those are great questions, and they lead perfectly into the previous question. There have basically two big things happened in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis. One was the Federal Reserve Bank and other central banks throughout the world. Although interest rates were down, short-term interest rates were down at zero, they didn't give up.
Yes.
And central bankers moved to new kinds of policies. So there are actually many different interest rates in the economy. There's interest rates on overnight loans, which is what the Fed and the Bank of England and the European Central Bank had traditionally tried to control. But there are many other rates, like interest rates on long-term debt, mortgage interest rates, long bonds, and all of those were amenable to intervention. And that's exactly what happened in policies that became called quantitative easing. So the Fed in particular started pumping money into the economy by buying various kinds of assets that it had never before owned.
Yes, like, you know, I used to tell my students that it's so exciting to teach macroeconomics now because there are so many new changes in terms of monetary policy, right?
That's right. So that, I think, you asked, did I think which policies were effective? That, I think, has been very effective, and I think it's been largely responsible for the big ramp up in the value of the stock market that we've seen in the last year. And the reason is that the money, as the Fed buys those long-term assets, it pumps more liquidity into the economy, more money. And some of that money found its way into stocks. And that increase in wealth helped insulate people from the tremendous loss in the value of their 401ks and their pension plans that had been largely responsible for the drop in spending and the recession, the real effects of the recession in the first place. So that was part of the answer. The other part is there was a very big fiscal stimulus
that went on at the same time.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how you feel about that. And although I think that a fiscal stimulus has its place, I think that almost certainly the hopes that the administration had for the effectiveness of that policy were not fulfilled. So some economists were arguing that if the government were to spend an extra $100, that the impact on real economic activity could be as big as $300 through a multiplier effect.
Yeah.
And my reading of the evidence is the multiplier is actually less than one.
Yes, it's non-existent for.
And what happened is private saving went up. At the same time, I think a lot of people were worried about the size of government in the future. They saved more because they saw their pensions evaporating and they saw Medicare benefits that might have been there going out the window. So I think that
Yeah, and this brings us to the Ricardian equivalence discussion
at play, right?
That people are worried about this huge government debt that is going to require higher taxation in the future.
Yes, that's exactly right. And now you see this big concern with deficits throughout the world are up around as high as 10, 12, or even higher percentage of GDP. And while interest rates are low, that's affordable. But sometime soon, when interest rates start climbing, those debt burdens on the UK, on the United States, on the European Union countries, we're seeing it already with Greece and Portugal and
trouble.
Spain. Those countries are already finding the cost of the fiscal stimulus enormous.
Oh, very interesting. Well, and this brings us to the next question. What do you think about inflation? Will we see inflation coming up soon? I am in the side that I've been worried about inflation hitting pretty soon since we had the fiscal stimulus. I've been worried about it. So I mean, like, I really want to get your thoughts about what do you think about is inflation going to come up soon? And is the Fed going to be able to deal with inflation effectively? What do you think?
I think it's a real concern.
It's a real concern, right?
If you look at the way that quantitative easing worked, the Federal Reserve balance sheet was about $850 billion in 2006. Now it's something like $2.2
trillion. Yeah, it has grown so much.
It's more than doubled. Now, most of that money is currently, a lot of that money, something over $1 trillion, is sitting in excess reserves.
Yes.
Now, that's both fortunate in that it's not contributing to inflation. It's unfortunate in that it's not stimulating the economy either.
Mm-hmm.
The worry
is that once banks start feeling more confident, they might start lending out more, and that money will reach the real economy.
Well, I hope they do, but I think
might lead to inflation.
I think the concern I have for inflation is once the interest rate's down at zero, there's no anchor anymore on the nominal economy. And yeah, inflation's a worry. Deflation is also a worry. Mm. We've just lost grip, and it's when I mentioned the ability of the Fed to help get the economy moving again in a recession by lowering interest rates. But they actually have just this one instrument, the interest rate, and two things they're trying to control. Inflation is the second, and it's in normal times. They raise interest rates when they start seeing inflation coming down the road.
Yeah.
Now, what's the possible scenario going forward? Well, one of our major trading partners now is China. China's already seeing bottlenecks in the labor market. Producer prices in China are now going up at 4 or 5% a year. And consumer price inflation is around 2, 3%. I'm a little concerned that we could import inflation from other countries through import prices.
Oh, so interesting.
But at some point, if we do start seeing inflation emerge, the Fed is going to be placed in a very difficult situation because hawks on the Open Market Committee would be saying we should raise rates right now to stop inflation. And if I don't see unemployment coming down to any reasonable level for 2 or 3 years, and I think there's a very good chance that we'll start seeing inflation before that. And I think that the old Keynesian, the Keynesians in the administration believe that we won't see inflation until we get back to capacity. But we've seen it before in the 1970s, and I don't see why we shouldn't see that again.
So interesting. Yeah, and I guess here, what do you think about this new policy of giving interest rates to banks for holding excess reserves that the Fed say that they're going to start raising if they want to tie up quantity of money? Do you think that's an effective way?
There's some concerns, you say that.
Right?
So yeah, what the Fed's doing by paying interest on reserves is essentially issuing their own treasury debt. Because if you're an investor and you could hold government bonds and earn a little under a 1 percentage point, or you could hold reserves at the Fed and earn a little under 1 percentage point.
Yeah.
Now, my view moving forward is that rather than rely on fiscal policy to get the real economy moving, we need to worry much more about the value of wealth and assets, the stock market, houses. And I think that the quantitative easing policy that the Fed's engaged in has been one way of doing that. paying interest on reserves or issuing their own debt is a way of operating on two margins at the same time, because I don't want to get too technical here, mm-hmm. but it allows them to use interest rates to control the money supply and at the same time worry about the value of longer-term assets without influencing money, because they're essentially buying one asset and issuing another by paying interest on reserves. Uh-huh. That, I think, is an interesting opportunity for an extension of policy going forward. We talked about the rudder on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Fiscal policy, for me, is the wrong way to steer the boat.
Yeah.
Expansion of quantitative easing in that direction is the way we should think about doing it in the future.
Oh, great, great answer. Well, and this brings us to my next question, which is, like, how should we move forward? What are your suggestions about what policies should we put in place? I mean, you have given your thoughts about monetary policy and fiscal policy. So if we can maybe just kind of wrap it up here. And I'm very interested in hearing your thoughts about what should we do next.
So again, I don't think fiscal policy has been effective. I think we should be worried about getting our fiscal house in order for the future. But I would be concerned about raising interest rates if that was all we did. I think interest rates will have to go up relatively soon as the economy starts to pick up, but I would try to insulate the effect on the stock market by intervening in more revolutionary forms of quantitative easing than the one that we've engaged in. And all I can say is read the book.
Okay, good. Very much. That sounds great. Yeah, thank you very much. We really appreciate your insights, especially for such important issues. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Louisa. It's been a pleasure.